So we're here now with Anthony Tyson Thompson, another candidate for Buffalo mayor. He goes by Tyson, so that's what I'll call you for this, for the sake of this conversation. Mm-hmm. And just briefly, a bio for everybody to know the background here. Tyson grew up in Buffalo, graduated from Hutch Tech, and then went on to university from there, started at Morgan State in Baltimore, then came back to Buffalo to Canisius, went off to Columbia, and then to Harvard for a degree in public administration and public policy. And from there has worked in primarily the nonprofit sector, but also in for-profit industries that are sort of consulting with and dealing with the nonprofit sector. And the first thing I want to start with that I want to get from everybody is, you know, not your brain reason why you're running for mayor of the city of Buffalo, but what's in your heart and what's in your soul that's driving you to want to do this?
Yeah, man. Running for mayor is definitely a thankless job. I think about the last 20 years of my life when everything goes wrong, I hit a pothole or garbage is not collected. I will always say, damn, Byron Brown. Like, so it's not something that I take lightly, and that's something that I want to take on without noticing the magnitude of what the job entails. I mean, it's really because I'm in it for transformation, man. Like, you know, it's as simple as that. I recognize that there is so much despair in the city of Buffalo, and that so many people are struggling, because I was one of them. I lived many of the challenges growing up in the east side of Buffalo. That so many residents are still living today, no matter what side of Buffalo you're in, east, west, north, or south. You know, Buffalo is one of the most economically challenged cities in the country. And I just come from one of the most economically communities or challenged communities in the most economically challenged cities in the country. So I live the challenges. But through, you know, my biggest cornerstones, which is for me, faith, hard work, and perseverance. I mean, no lies, not just a soundbite, but I've been able to persevere, make something of my life. And always kind of back to that faith thing, coming back to give back. And, you know, more than a public servant or community organizer, I would describe myself as a change agent. And I go where I can make the biggest impact. And right now, after praying and discernment, you know, I came into this race late. After a lot of prayer and discernment, I decided this is where my skill set will be applied the best. And when I looked at the other candidates, I seen something that there was a gap that's missing. And it's not just the empathy, it's not just compassion, but turning those things into action. So I'm running to, you know, systemically and structurally change Buffalo.
Okay. And what do you think that you yourself brings to the table in this, you know, if you were the mayor, what do you think that about yourself you're bringing to this position?
I would say a scholar practitioner. I'm both a scholar. I mean, you just tailed off a long resume of academic qualifications. And actually, I went to Canisius, or I went to Morgan State, which is HBCU. Then I went to Canisius after my father had got sick, came back to take care of him, finished with a dual degree in poli sci and criminal justice. I was a community organizer for a bit. And then I went to Columbia for negotiations and conflict resolution. I was telling a story earlier about how, you know, I wanted to be a nonprofit leader. And at some point, I decided to say to myself, do I want to learn how to keep the businesses of nonprofit going? Or do I really want to resolve the issues that are impacting communities? And that's my, you know, catalyst for studying at Columbia, negotiations and conflict. It's actually the premier school for that. And then I went to further expertise, so I studied public policy and got a degree as an MPA, or Master's of Public Administration, from Harvard on a full ride. So my entire ethos, my entire professional and adult, even in my childhood, life experience has always been service. I mean, it's always about giving back. Like I said, I'm a man of faith, and I believe that God blesses those who use their blessings for other people. You know, my personal reasons for really running is that this is my home. You know, my mom lives here, my siblings, I'm one of eight. I have nieces and nephews, cousins, aunts, uncles, the whole gamut. So it's like this is home for me. And I would say that the gap that I have that I'm trying to address is that, one, the qualifications that I have is that I'm a scholar, and two, that I have lived experiences. I know what it's like for, you know, to live in a family where a mom has to decide between buying groceries or to pay the mortgage, between paying the heat bill or giving kids extra money for a school trip. You know, I know But, you know, and then I have the actual practitioner, the professional practitioner part of I've been in the community. I've done some of the work. I work for some of the greatest minds and greatest activists and change agents in Buffalo, whether it was working for Crystal People Stokes as a council director for several years. During the pandemic, I was helping to run the VAC site at UB that was by the governor's office in the Department of Health. I've been a public advocate working for the American Cancer Society, and I've raised millions of dollars nationwide to help nonprofits throughout the country do transformational change. So my life is about transformation, and not only just for the sake of saying it, but actual systemic and structural change.
Okay, with that is, you know, there's some other questions I want to get back to, but these reasons, like the childhood that you describe and the state of the East Side and a lot of the residents of the city of Buffalo, I'm curious as to what you think that like local government can bring to that, and particularly going forward now where I think we're going to see, you know, less federal help probably than the city is used to. And what do you think a mayor can do to address some of these issues?
Yeah, so the entire city, you know, I read a lot of papers, and they always call Buffalo one of the most affordable cities in the country. And that's just cold for saying we're broke. and I know, like, a lot of people are struggling right now with, like, you know, rent and mortgages, and the housing market is going up. And they say, oh, well, relatively, we're still affordable. But to the everyday Buffalonian, what does that mean? You know, we're still being outpriced. Gentrification is a real thing. So to that, you know, our city executive, the mayor of Buffalo, has to be the biggest organizer. They have to be the person who's willing to be a partner at every level of government. And, you know, sometimes politics gets an ego gets in a lot of folks' way. You know, as the city mayor, my number one job is to first keep people safe and then make sure that we have all of the resources needed to be a thriving city. So that means working partner to partner, shoulder to shoulder with people from the city, county, state, and federal level. It doesn't really matter who sits in the White House. As a mayor, I have to make sure that our people have everything that they need to be and have a thriving life. So, you know, that's one, a partnership in City Hall. And two, recognizing no matter how smart I am, no matter how many Ivy League degrees or how many HBCUs I went to, that I'm not the smartest person in the world. So, you know, everybody's an expert in their own lives. You know, only they can speak their truth and tell you what it is that they see. And I have to be open to hearing them and seeing them and listening to their real issues. So having that empathy is really important, right, at City Hall. And then, you know, making things as accessible and transparent as possible. And I know people always say that because it sounds good, but we have to put it into actual practice. I can't tell you how many initiatives there are for the East Side or for the West Side or for South Side or even North Buffalo. But the problem is that the system or the process to get it is so convoluted. Like, you know, once again, like I have, it took, my mom just bought a house and she lives, she just bought a house and she wanted to like redo her windows. And there's a whole bunch of state programs and also like city programs to redo your windows, and you get it done and you get like a tax incentives. You just file it back and you get the money. And I was having just the hardest time myself. You know, this is a guy with the Ivy League degree. You know what I mean? I had a hard time. I feel like I needed maybe two law degrees to be able to apply for this grant and loan. So we're not making government accessible and we're not making it work for the working person. And when we think about that, maybe what we need to do is kind of get off our high horse and figure out ways in which we can help people navigate through the system, not just give them the burden of having to figure out on themselves. And also making sure that we're not just doing policy design because it sounds good, but actually realizing and reality testing what that means. We can say that we're going to give, you know, $100,000 for West Side residents or for city residents for entrepreneurship or for small businesses. But if they're not, you know, ready or have a small businesses, then you're really just doing it all for naught. Maybe what we need to do is invest in first more small business classes so they can learn what a business plan is or how to take out a loan or what support services you need. So we have to be, or have to do the simple things way more better than what we've been doing in previous decades and years.
Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody we talk to, they kind of, there's something that comes up that really like, it kind of hits me that I like, this is something I've thought about a lot and I care about. And, you know, my own experiences with government and the systems have formed these opinions. But so I absolutely agree with you in that. I think the challenges is a lot of this stuff is kind of above the city level. Mm-hmm. But I think that what you bring up, and I guess I want to reframe in a little bit in a different way, is mm-hmm. the relationship that we have to the government. And oftentimes our relationship as citizens to our government is not good. And it has to do with these things that you're bringing up. Like when you apply for a grant or you're trying to do this thing, they make it so cumbersome, and you hear them things like, you know, they say, well, it's to reduce fraud, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really it just becomes this whole other job, whether you're a tenant on Section 8 and mm-hmm. you know, when you're somebody that, you know, in order to fill out her paperwork that needed to be sent in to keep her Section 8, she would have to take a Uber to a Kinko's or whatever so that she could fax the paperwork in, because they only fax it in, right?
Yeah.
So it becomes this whole other, like, part of your life where you're just doing this stuff, uh-huh. which is all silly stuff,
right,
to stay on the system. And the same with a lot of these grant programs that are often designed for, you know, let's say home repair and stuff,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, often these are targeted towards elderly people that, you know, need some assistance fixing up their house, or they need, you know, people that need it. But it's so complicated that they can't even figure out how to get through it and do it. Mm-hmm. So if you could pick, like, so let's say you're mayor now.
Yeah.
What's the first thing, like, what's the first thing that you're going to do to kind of hit the road, run, and start off to start to address some of these things?
I would call a meeting with all my department heads, and I would just say, hey, we got to cut the shit. You know, we got to actually have conversations of how can we make sure that we're operating. We need to have customer service. Customer service is often lost when it comes to city government. Customer service, like Chick-fil-A. We need to be asking people. And when I leave from Chick-fil-A, I feel like I've had everything addressed. I feel good going to Chick-fil-A because I know I'm about to be treated with dignity, respect, and I was going to get fast and efficient services, right? And this is no plug for Chick-fil-A. But, you know, we got to make sure that we're treating people with dignity and making sure people feel seen. And, you know, there are so many things that we can do, not even at a structural, just at a beginning level of just common sense of making sure people, you know, feel good about City Hall and people have a relationship. There is nothing more local and more personal than city government. You know, as we get to county and as we get to state and federal government, it becomes more and more abstract. And, you know, those polarizing issues that we talk about, like, you know, war in the Middle East or, you know, abortions and stuff like that, it gets abstract. But at the city level, we're potholes, we're garbage, mm-hmm. we're education, we're the things that impact you on a day-to-day basis, right? We are the root and we are the beginning, the alpha of all of these things. So we got to make sure at the very least that people can come to city government for help and we are there to assist them. And, you know, is simplistic in thought, but it's a very complex thing because we're dealing with structures and systems. And, you know, as mayor, my first thing is to make sure that we're not burdening our residents and community members, that we're there to help them thrive, whether it's changing our curriculum and education system for kids and making sure they feel supported, or addressing childhood poverty, which is one of the worst in the country, making sure they have food so they can learn. Making sure that there's economic opportunity, that there are public and private jobs coming to the city of Buffalo, and that our residents are qualified and ready and prepared for those jobs when they do come. So, you know, it depends on the day. It depends on the temperature, and it depends on which thing is ripe for intervention. For me to say, you know, what is this, June? For me to, or about to be June, that's about, what, 6 months away from Inauguration Day. I would say that it's real political when people say, my first 100 days, I would do this, 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 and this, and this, and this. And you want to have some kind of plan. But what we learned, or at least what I learned at Columbia, was that when you're trying to resolve conflict, you need to have interventions that are ripe for the system, saying that you just don't force anything in there, because it's like it's a matrix code. There's no such thing as a broken system. So everything works and is designed by a way. So if you try to force something, what that system is going to do is it's going to push back. There's an inertia to it. So you have to make sure that you are looking at all the variables, looking at the right people. How engaging is this thing? How ripe is it? And then actually then use that thing. And it's to say that it's not always going to work. And as a leader, you have to be okay with failure. But I feel a lot of times with City Hall is that people, they're afraid to fail. They're afraid of taking big, bold, decisive action because they don't want to take the political hit, the political capital hit. So, you know, you got to have brave and courageous leadership, and you got to have new vision. You know, you got to see what works and see what doesn't work and try to cut out the fat.
I think you touched on something I heard in a discussion somewhere about, it was about negotiation, I think, actually. And they were talking about bureaucracies and, you know, the classic bureaucratic, like when you go in and you want to do something and the answer is always no. Uh-huh. And the reason the answer is always no is because it's safer to say no.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so that, you know, that no is because people aren't empowered. And so that there's no decision making allowed, or that the system doesn't allow those people to think outside the box.
Yeah.
And that's why and I can probably tell you, everybody that's listening to this has had that experience where you're dealing with one of these situations where you're like pulling your hair out and you're like, no, there is a solution to this and it's actually easy, but somebody is just telling you no.
Yeah.
So that's a huge, that's a massive cultural shift within an organization, particularly within a municipality, I think.
Yeah, I think you got to have to. So when you talk about bureaucracies, you talk about structures and systems. That's the long game. So you have to have build what's called a capacity of despair, right? Because when you're trying to really transform systems, when you're really trying to do the hard, good work of, you know, change, then it's not going to happen overnight. You know, one of my favorite things to say is that about, you know, Martin Luther King, I'm a huge fan of the civil rights movement and how our country did that. And Martin Luther King used to always talk about the moral arc of the universe, how it's long, but it's bent towards justice. And he's saying that like, you know, the promised land or the thing that we're trying to achieve isn't going to happen overnight. Like when you're dealing with systemic issues, they typically are intractable and they happen over generations and millenniums. And it's not just, you know, one thing or one leader that's going to be able to change it all. That's not how it works. You have to do what you can to create the painfully slow and incremental change. Just moving a little, just a little forward, just a little, just that's all you can really do. And know that you're going to come against a lot of different pushback, a lot of variables, a lot of failure, maybe even some hate, right? But you keep moving on and move on. And then hopefully you're at a place where you can pass the baton to the next generation of leaders to do the same thing. So keeping that in mind, right? Bureaucracy is a part of the system. But at the end of the day, we have to also be honest in saying that systems are just people. What is a system? What is an institution? It's just a very organized group of people who have similar ideas or at least goals. So when you're addressing it from that matter, then you recognize that it is possible, because it is possible to change minds. You just have to be open to curiosity, not curiosity for persuasion, but curiosity for understanding, so you guys can find alignment and then move forward. And hopefully with that kind of patience, that kind of compassion and empathy, action is always going to be there to come. You just need a leader who knows that nuance, you can see it and thread it perfectly.
I'm going to shift the conversation here a little bit. And I'm going to ask you a question that I know is on a lot of people's minds. And then I'm going to bring in some of my thoughts that we can continue the conversation. But the 33 is on a lot of people's minds these days. Mm-hmm. And so I know that that's something that people want to hear an answer to, what people's position on that is.
Yeah.
And why?
Well, mine's, so I love the idea of covered in 33. I would like the expressway to still be underneath, only because I like, you know, the driving a little quick. I'm always late. but honestly, you know, I was exposed to the detail and to the passionate efforts of people who've been trying to tackle this issue for decades. When I was working for majority leader of the New York State Assembly, Crystal People Stokes, as their comms director. And what I recognize, you know, meeting with people from ROC, Restore Our Community Coalition, and all the other advocacy groups who were petitioning and, you know, trying to push the covering of the 33, was that this was environmental injustice. This was a little bit of environmental racism, that a highway was built and cut through a community that separated, you know, folks and plummeted property value overnight. My grandparents, who had 9 children, including my mom, they lived on Utica, which was a couple of blocks away from the expressway when it was being built. And they can remember just the mind-numbing pain it was to hear them just da-dunk, da-dunk, da-dunk every day for every day of construction. And how, you know, it created a whole bunch of public health issues. A lot of people now suffer from asthma. It's possible that it could be cancerous as well. I mean, all that smog that comes through the highway every single day, right? Thousands of cars. It's insane. So covering it makes the most sense because it's going to restore a community, make it a lot more efficient for foot travel and traffic. And I think it's going to beautify the neighborhood. I just think that we have to make sure and that we have a leader in place who is going to make sure that the concerns are addressed, that everybody feels heard in the process, that it's going to be a healthy and sustainable solution and adjusting to it, and just being open to being patient.
And well, to follow up on that a little bit, one of the things that I see about it is that, and this is, I think, this is something that's frustrated me about Buffalo for a long time, is I feel like we address all these things as singular things. Like, you know, so there was the debate about the Peace Bridge. Then there was the, you know, the thing that Cuomo did with the Skyway. And we've been talking about the 198 for years. And then now we're talking about the 33, and, you know, actually none of these things have actually happened. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that that's a problem that Buffalo has, is we just deal with one particular thing when these are actually all interrelated issues, and we've got to, you know, somehow figure out how does the whole city operate. And that, if we're talking about it, and that's one aspect of the city, which is just traffic. And that's about all the roads in Buffalo, not just about the 33.
Yeah, I mean, you hit on a good deduction, man. We're very siloed in how we approach a lot of these issues. And we're very kind of like, okay, let's do this thing over here. And, you know, hopefully we'll get to that other thing in the future. And what that leads is the same old, you know, same old. And, you know, that's a real loss because, you know, everything is connected, you know. Everything, when you pull on one lever, you're pushing on another. And it is so much more efficient to make sure that when we're doing things, we're having a holistic view of how this impacts everything else. And sometimes collaborating with other partners. So you mentioned that former Congressman Higgins was doing the Skyway, and you had someone who was doing the 190, then, you know, somebody doing the 33. But if we all come and unify through partnerships and coalitions as, hey, this is Buffalo, Western New York, let's all come together to see how we can put the best minds or electeds to solve this issue might be the best. So, you know, as the next mayor, I don't plan on doing anything for glory. I'm doing this thing for actual systemic transformation. And that's the one. I don't care who gets the credit. I just need to get done. I just need the roads to be paved so people get to and from work. I just need school to educate our kids and inspire them to move on. I need economic opportunity so our talent can stay in Buffalo and we can have people coming to Buffalo. So, you know, you're right. And we have to make sure that we're changing our approach to how we are addressing issues in the city of Buffalo. So that's really good.
The other thing that, of course, is on everybody's mind here, and it's, you know, as long as I've been lived in Buffalo, and we're going on, since the 90s at this point, is the fiscal state of the city.
Yeah.
And, you know, seem to be, you've brought it up already, perpetually financially behind the eight ball. Mm-hmm. And so I guess there's a big reckoning with that. And then also, how do we actually address it? I'll give you a few things to start off with, and then I'll let you kind of run with it. But certainly the parking garage transfer at this point is I guess it's happening, but that is something that everybody has an opinion on. And the other ways in which you see not just Buffalo, but every sort of system of government generate money when they need it is through fines and fees and this and that, and sort of figuring out how do we collect more revenue right now. But I think we need some, you know, we obviously need some long-term strategies.
Yeah.
So if you want to just start with maybe addressing those things and then move to how do you see moving Buffalo forward financially?
Okay. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I would say to begin that, you know, $70 million deficit, at least that's what was last count, is pretty significant for our fiscal, you know, future. I think we have to do the boring hard work of doing a full audit of city government operations, of figuring out how we could best keep frontline services, but also figure out where the inefficiency lies and how we could possibly coalition together with departments and services to see if there are maybe overlap and which ways we can do it. But more importantly, I think the biggest answer is going to be that we're going to have to expand our revenue. Buffalo, like I keep saying, is one of the most economically challenged cities in the country. We're not going to tax our people out of a deficit. That's not only unfair, it's unethical, right? We can't put $70 million on people who are already struggling to pay rent, to take care of their children, to pay the mortgage. We got to find real ways to do it. And I don't think necessarily selling off city property is going to be, it's a temporary fix. I don't really think that, you know, when we're already struggling with tourism, that doing a bed tax is going to work. It might hurt us in the long run. I don't necessarily think that cutting overtime is going to do it. What I would say is that we have to have a mayor who's open to thinking about how can we long-term strategize and invest in the city of Buffalo so that we're reaping a reward. And that takes, first of all, you talked about being behind the eight ball. I think doing this year-to-year budget is really a shortfall. We have to be thinking long-term. So I'm really in favor and a proponent of multi-year budgeting, where we have long strategic goals throughout the city of Buffalo. And so we can plan properly and not lose our head every year when things are going awry. We have to be honest and speak truth, not only to power, but to our people. So we have to stop overestimating revenue and underestimating the cost. We have to be real about this. You got to work with the comptroller. You got to see, you know, what they are thinking and how we can move together forward. So we have to be kind of shoulder to shoulder in how we see the fiscal responsibility, that means fiscal situation of Buffalo. And then we got to make sure that we're doing things, like I said, once again, ethically. You know, you said earlier that some cities, the best way they figure out how to get revenue is to, you know, fines. I've also been a college kid in the city of Buffalo, and I'll tell you, my experience with the parking enforcement wasn't always the best. When you're dealing as a blue collar worker or you're a college kid and you're just broke naturally, you know, you get a ticket and $45 to pay. It sounds little, but it's a lot for a kid. It's a lot for anybody in this city. And then if you don't pay it in a couple of days, they almost double it. And then you get that ticket, and you get another ticket, and it's almost predatory. And then after a while, if your car gets impounded because you're too broke to pay your tickets, they'll impound the car. And then you got to go down to City Hall because you have to take the bus now to City Hall because you don't got a car. You get down there, you have to wait in a horrible line. You treat with that horrible non-Chick-fil-A customer service. And then they treat you like you're the biggest jerk in the world and you're just trying to get help. And they say, well, in order to get your car back, you have to pay all the tickets. You got to pay the impound and whatever fees are associated with. And it better not be a Friday, because if your car is impounded on Friday, you don't get it by 5 o'clock, it's there for the weekend. And not only that, you can't get it out on the weekends because the impound is closed. But you still get the wonderful gift of being charged for Saturday and Sunday on those things. I don't really care what the deficit is. We have to treat our people as humans and understanding. And, you know, having the person to pay thousands of dollars in one swoop without payment plans, you know, without, you know, a little bit of mercy. I mean, I think it's a real failure. And I think we have to be compassionate in how we approach this deficit. So, you know, getting money is one thing, but how we get it is the most important. And that's what I'll be doing. And that's how I'll be working with the city council, with our department heads, with the residents of the city of Buffalo, and listening to how can we do this with compassion.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had that particular experience with parking enforcement.
God bless you.
I have had my fair share of parking tickets over the years. Yeah. But I have had that similar experience, and I won't go into it, but I think everybody has with some kind of government agency. You know, what you brought up is something that I also feel strongly about, and it goes back to what we talked about initially, is the relationship you have with the government as an individual, as a person. And oftentimes it is these very confrontational, kind of adversarial relationships, and that's how you end up interacting with the government. Mm-hmm. But I also, I do strongly feel that a lot of these, the reason I'm, you know, kind of, you know, morally opposed to a lot of these, the fees and fines and stuff is not about me particularly, even though I've experienced it. But what it points out to me is the and particularly in a city like Buffalo, the precariousness that a lot of the residents are in financially, that, it doesn't take much to tip you over the edge.
Yeah.
And you start to see how these systems that the government has in fact created, which are in theory supposed to make your behavior better.
Right.
Right. You're not supposed to do this or whatever it is. But, you know, stuff happens, and whether through fault of your own or not, and you can wind up in these situations where suddenly you're hundreds or thousands of dollars in debt to the city, which then, or any kind of government, not just the city, that then may affect your ability to drive your car, get to work, take your kids to school, pay your rent, and so on and so forth. So it really snowballs. I think that is that's a huge issue at particularly like the local levels, county level and state level of government.
Right.
That I mean, I would love to see that fixed, because I think that it is something that government.
I mean, you have to be cognizant of the people. You know what I mean? And, you know, a fine might be a fine. But for somebody, it could be like, you know, literally life or death, or literally like a job or being homeless. If their car is taken away, you know, I joked about it from my own experience. But for some people, it's not a joke. Like, they having their car towed away can perpetuate the cycle of despair or poverty, because now they don't have access to a vehicle to get to work. Ubers are not that cheap. Buses are not always convenient. So, you know, you have to be cognizant, and you have to be aware of holistic approach. And there's other ways to deter people from doing things than just finding them. And if you do find them, then, you know, make it, you know, humane. Maybe a payment plan might be the best option. Maybe, you know, working with them to figure out, like, you know, or talking to residents about why is this parking thing, or why is this thing always happening on this side of the street, or whatever it is. But, you know, always find a way to fine or burden somebody with a fee, I don't think is necessarily good governance. Yeah.
And, you know, one other thing, since, you know, we're on this topic, I'm curious about your, you know, in your education, you know, what came up about, you know, taxation and revenue generation, or how you do that. I've read some interesting articles, and I have some own my own kind of thoughts about property taxes that are maybe not fully formed, and I'm not saying they're any kind of solution, but I have read some pretty high-level economists that have written about that property taxes are actually the most regressive form of taxation that we have. And it's and there's other proposals for ways to generate, it's not saying that like we eliminate all property tax, right, but different ways of figuring out what tax is actually owed on a property, and actually going way back in Buffalo's history, the initial property taxes, you're taxed on your street frontage, right? Okay. So it makes sense when you think you go down Delaware and you've got these massive mansions, right, that owned hundreds of feet of frontage, that they could afford it, and then you get into the neighborhoods, the working class neighborhoods, where they're building these little, you know, cottages for all the factory workers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're on 25-foot lots, 27-foot lots, 30-foot lots was like the big size for if you were a little cottage.
Yeah.
But that's where that lot size actually stemmed from. It was how we taxed back in the early days of Buffalo. So I'm curious if in your education, was any of this kind of stuff brought up? Did you talk about these kind of things?
Yeah, I had the pleasure of taking a few classes in finance and budgeting. One of the first things that they tell you during Harvard orientation is like, hey, you guys are smart, but you guys don't know. You know what I mean? Saying that, don't try to be the expert of everything. You know, figure out what it is that you know and your leadership capabilities, and then lean on those things, but be open to having other people in the room who are experts. So economists or historians or people who are just everyday citizens, right? Smart enough to know I'm not the smartest person in the world. So trust me, no real ego. But you're right. You know, we have to find ways to use taxes equitably, right? That, you know, are fair across the board. And I think one of those ways that you kind of brought up might be a good idea. I don't know. We will have to kind of reality test it, have to speak to other experts and see what it is. But the idea is you have to be open to new ideas and new visions to be bold and courageous to take us out of this deficit. At this point, this issue, this finance situation that we're in, is structural. It's an issue because it's now become systemic. There's a problem that we're overspending and that we're not making enough revenue. So that means that we can't do the same old and expect a new buffalo out of it. We have to have new vision, new dynamic leaders, people who are actually going to say, all right, this thing hasn't been working. What can we do to actually address it and how can we move forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess, you know, another challenge with a city like Buffalo, and you hear this all the time. I mean, the phrase is shrinking tax base, right? And Buffalo is certainly not the only city to face that challenge. But one of the things, I mean, you know, I would be fascinated to know, like, you know, for example, we know how many tax parcels there are in the city of Buffalo, right? This is something that could be looked up. It wouldn't be hard to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
And what percentage of that, of those tax parcels are actually paying tax?
Mm-hmm.
Because of all the properties that are city owned, the properties that might be, you know, nonprofit, churches, like all this other stuff. And it's not to say that you immediately go and tax all these people, but like, yeah, how do we look at like what it costs to run the city by tax parcel? Right. Yeah. And so when we hear this phrase shrinking tax base, like it would be fascinating. Like, what are the actual numbers to that? Like,
yeah.
What does that mean on a piece of paper? And then how do you translate that into an action to reverse that?
So I know what it is in the story, right? Because we just experienced a tax shrinkage. So, you know, Buffalo's been on decline for like the last 70 years. And the recent census just showed us that we had our first modest uptick in growth in terms of population in the city of Buffalo. And what that did was that it attributed a whole bunch of flaws already in our city structures, because it created more demand for homes, both to be owned and rented. So it drove off the market. So, you know, it created issues with different, you know, racial groups moving into different communities. You know, Buffalo's one of the most segregated cities in the country. So a lot of that tension is now there. You know, as mayor, I want to grow the tax base. I want to grow Buffalo. I want people coming to Buffalo, right? I want people coming to visit Buffalo, coming to tour Buffalo, have fun in Buffalo. But right now, our city isn't set up that way to accommodate that kind of growth because of so many issues that are here. So we have to do the simple things first, better than what we've been doing. Do the simple things better. That's one. And then two, grow our tax base by making Buffalo a destination. I'm not saying we're going to be Miami or D.C. or Atlanta or L.A. or New York. We could be Buffalo. We could find out what our culture is, what our entertainment is. Why would somebody want to come to Buffalo over the weekend versus leave Buffalo to go somewhere else? That's how we bring more revenue in. That's how we make Buffalo more vibrant, more fun, a more place where people want to come and want to stay. And, you know, that's a simple low-hanging way fruit of just making sure our city is better and moving forward. Toronto is 2 hours north, so it's colder and gloomier. Yet somehow they have a thriving culture and a thriving entertainment industry. Now, those things help stimulate their economy. Those things help sustain it as well. So we have to look at other cities, just not, you know, statewide, but globally, to see what things that they might be doing that we can use as a case study to figure out how we can improve Buffalo. So it was going again of being a student of public arenas and making sure that we have everything and we're looking at other people's examples of how to implement what they're doing to Buffalo that's going to work for Buffalo.
Yeah, I was, my wife and I, we had an Airbnb. This was going well before the pandemic,
mm-hmm.
In our house. And I was absolutely amazed at the number of people that were coming to Buffalo for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I was like, I, you know, I you know, here I'm in Buffalo, and I'm like, why are you guys coming to Buffalo? We tried this Airbnb thing. Wings, we didn't know what we were doing exactly, who would come.
Yeah.
And of course, the pandemic upended all of that. But what was interesting to me is that there were a tremendous amount of people from Canada coming down, from Ohio coming here, from other places that were reading about the breweries. Mm-hmm. And so the people were coming here and doing brewery tours. They were going to the Martin House. It was the point where the Buffalo restaurant scene was starting to get some press and some names. So people were coming from Toronto to go to the Black Sheep, which is now closed. But
yeah, I used to always get the date cake there.
You ever had the dessert? Oh, that was so good.
Fire.
Yeah. So anyway, it is interesting the number of people that want to travel for reasons that you don't necessarily
You know, Buffalo's really a hidden gem, man. My favorite mural is to keep Buffalo a secret.
Yeah.
I love that because, honestly, I mean, not as mayor anymore. We need to make sure we're, spreading the word and getting people here. But there's so many things that you can get in Buffalo that you can't get in a lot of places. First of all, great wings, where ranch is not an option. Blue cheese and blue cheese only. If you eat ranch, do not vote for me. Not fun. But real mom and pop shops where the food tastes like you're at somebody's grandma's house, right? And that's really popular in Buffalo. Like, Pizza Hut's, Domino's don't really exist in Buffalo because we have just such a good culture of pizza and wings.
Yeah, no, that is something.
And
that's always been I've been proud about Buffalo for that reason.
Yeah, Buffalo food is one of a kind. And then you have the artistic scene. You have so many different creators in Buffalo. We're just oozing in talent and culture and food. We just need the right leader to kind of, put it together and harness it.
And so we're going to wrap up. And I hope, one of the goals is to continue having these conversations through the race. But I'm going to ask you one last question and then we'll end it. And is there another city or another leader that you see that particularly inspires you?
I think anybody who enters the public arena inspires me because I knew before, but definitely now, that it's not easy work. A lot of the work that I think elected officials do, it goes unseen and unheard, like the long hours, the nights. I honestly think that every candidate who's running for mayor is currently a good person, is a good guy. I just think that I'm the most qualified for the time and for the job. But I've always been inspired by even my parents who were kind of activists in the community, my grandparents, church leaders, who are, at some point were very, had to be political too. I'm a student of the civil rights movement. So people like, John Lewis and Martin Luther King speaks highly, to me. I love, people like Thurgood Marshall. I also love, even like the Clintons, I like them, how they approach stuff. I just always been a student of service and how people can actually make transformational change. And however anybody attempts to do it, I learn a lot actually through people's failures than their successes. Because only through failure you can see exactly what they think went wrong, what might have actually went wrong, and how they could have actually moved around it. Thank you. Thank you for the question, man.
Well, thank you, Tyson.
Hey,
and thanks for the conversation, and hopefully we'll have you back.
I appreciate it.